Tonight our program is on Israel, the crossroads of three continents. No matter where one may travel, there's no place that has a greater fascination than those countries around the Mediterranean Sea, because this is the origin of our ancestors. Our ancestors, most of them came from this area. This is the roots of Western civilization, our culture, the things that we hold so valuable in democracy in the United States and so forth. But also, these are the lands of the Bible. This is a geographical setting for the great drama of redemption as set forth in the Holy Scriptures. And so here are these countries around the Mediterranean Sea, which contains all the results and the fascinating stories of the Bible. And the most important of all is the one with which we begin tonight, is the land of Israel. Israel at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea, and the city of Jerusalem, the center of the earth. In fact, in the Middle Ages, when they drew maps like at the right, they drew three continents in three circles overlapping in the middle with the city of Jerusalem. Here's Europe and Asia and Africa down at the bottom. Okay, the circle in the middle, that's the city of Jerusalem. And the Bible calls Jerusalem the navel of the earth. And as the navel is the center of the human body, so Jerusalem is the center of this planet, the most important city on this earth. And the city of Jerusalem is more than architecture, more than trees and shrubs. It's a great idea. It's a great concept. And it has meaning no matter when you're there. It's a very special city. Now, the city of Jerusalem is a holy city for three great monotheistic religions, which mean there are only three of the great world religions that believe in one deity. And Islam, founded by Muhammad, is the number three city for the Muslims. And for Judaism, and of course it's a holy city for the Jewish people, and of all the peoples that's ever ruled over Jerusalem, besides the Crusaders, only one ever made Jerusalem its capital. You know, Rome ruled over, but it wasn't the capital of the Roman Empire. You know, and it was ruled over by Persia, but it wasn't the capital of the Persian Empire. Only one, and that's David. And made it his capital, and today Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel. And so Jerusalem is a very holy place for the Jewish people. And then, of course, Christianity. And So indeed, the city of Jerusalem, the land of Israel, is the crossroads of three continents, where three continents come together, the center of the earth. Now, God, it was the very center of the Fertile Crescent. And 2000 B.C., God called Abraham from his urban metropolitan area down on the Persian Gulf, the city of Ur, to come up the Fertile Crescent down to the very middle. And God gave him that land for an everlasting possession. 2000 B.C. 1000 B.C., God made a covenant with David and promised him an eternal seed, an eternal throne, eternal kingdom. And so the very first verse in the New Testament starts with the words, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, 1000 B.C., the son of Abraham, 2000 B.C. And so here it is, this land of Israel, and so very important in the promises and the prophecies of God. Well, what makes the Holy Land holy is God's holy Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, who was born here, who spent his boyhood and his earthly ministry and died on the cross and rose from the dead and ascended to heaven. And someday he's coming back to this earth again. And Jerusalem will be the capital city of Christ's future kingdom. But you know, Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And you know, Bethlehem is kind of like a suburb of Jerusalem. It's only about 5 miles to get there. And when you're down in the shepherd's field, you can look up in the distance and see the buildings on the top of the Mount of Olives. And here are these terraced hillsides of Bethlehem. And here are the shepherd's fields, these very same fields where Ruth gleaned in the fields after Boaz, where David was the shepherd boy, and where the shepherds were watching their flocks by night when Jesus was born. You know, Israel has the same climate as Arizona. Israel and Egypt are just like Arizona. We have the same trees and everything, and summer most all the time. And so they don't have any big red barns. In my home state of Indiana, had these big red barns, you know, with stables inside. And I think of the Christmas story, it's like one of these big barns and so on. But over in Israel, it's they use the caves. And the caves is what they would use for their stables. And so when Christ was born, and laid in a manger, it probably was in the cave where he was born. The little town of Bethlehem, a small village, but has great significance and great meaning to all the peoples of the world. Today, the village of Bethlehem is an Arab city. It's an Arab Christian city. And many Christians are there. And here the main attraction is the Church of the Nativity, the Church of the Nativity, which was built by Constantine's mother, Helena. And Constantine's mother came here and said, "Where was Christ born?" I said, "Here it is. This is the cave. This is the cave where Christ was born." Let the music go on. And you know, this is the oldest church in Christendom. The Persians came through here and they destroyed all the Christian churches they could find in the 600s. But inside this church, there were pictures of the wise men dressed in Persian clothes. So the Persians didn't destroy this church. And so here is, and you have to stoop down to enter into the Church of the Nativity. And a basilica-type church, you go up the nave and around the chancel, down the steps, and you come down into this cave at the right, this grotto. And they say, this is the place where Jesus was born. Well, was it this cave, or was it on down the road someplace? Well, this is the real Bethlehem, and this is actually where Jesus was born. And his birth has been the inspiration of artists throughout the centuries. Some of the great, most famous works of art in the museums of Europe tell the stories of the Bible. Well, the artists today in Bethlehem are the olive wood carvers. They have an olive wood factory, and here they make things out of olive wood. And they're sold in Bethlehem and all over Israel. Well, Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but he spent his boyhood in Nazareth. And Nazareth is where Mary and Joseph both lived. And in Nazareth is up in the mountains, up in the hills. And it's a Christian Arab city, too, with Christians of many different denominations. And it was here that the angel Gabriel came and announced to Mary that she was to be the mother of the Son of God. And so Fra Angelico and Donatello and all these artists have attempted to portray this of the Annunciation of the birth of Christ. This church, the Church of the Annunciation, is the largest church in all of the Middle East. And I've been watching them build this church. The first time I went in 1966, all they had was a cave. And said, here's the cave where Mary was when the angel came. And they've been building this church, and it's finished. It's a beautiful church, eight-sided, and like so many of the churches were, because eight is the number of resurrection, the new covenant, the new creation. So eight-sided, here's this church, a beautiful church here in Nazareth. Well, here one can really walk where Jesus walked. And here Jesus spent his boyhood. And when he became 30 years of age, well, then he began his earthly ministry. And the first thing that happened was that he was immersed in the waters of the Jordan River. Now, the Jordan River is a very important geographical factor in the land of Israel. It goes from the north to the south, and it starts at the north at three different places, and the whole thing is below sea level. And it starts at the north, and it flows down through the Sea of Galilee and on down to the Dead Sea. Now, the Jordan River starts at three different places up north. One here is at the Dan Falls. See the water coming out of the mountain in the middle? Okay, and so it rushes on down to join two other streams. One of these other streams comes out of this mountain here at Caesarea Philippi. And this is the place where Jesus asked the disciples, who do men say that I am? And they gave him many different answers. And who do you say that I am? And this is where Peter made his great confession of faith, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, upon this rock, upon this great statement of faith you have made, Peter, I will build my church, and it's indestructible. It may be betrayed from within and bombarded from without, but the Bible Church of God will go on and will be here when the Lord Jesus Christ comes. When the Lord comes, will he find faith on the earth? The answer is yes, he certainly will. But right here where this happened here, Caesarea Philippi, up here, that water flows on down and it joins with these other streams and flows right through the Sea of Galilee, coming in to the left and flowing on out at the south. And on down the great horseshoe bends, kind of like the Shenandoah River in Virginia, past the fish hatcheries. And on the left, you can see Jordan. And on the right is Israel. And see how lush it is down there around that Jordan River? And the Jordan River then flows on south, and it empties into the Dead Sea. And there's no way for that water to get out. The only way for that water to get out of that Dead Sea is to evaporate into the air. And it leaves behind all the salts and the minerals and the potash and all these chemicals and all these things, so that the Sea of Galilee is about, the Dead Sea is about one-third solid material. And the Dead Sea is the border between Israel and Jordan. And there's many places where you can go swimming in the Dead Sea. Well, you can't really go swimming. You float, and you can't sink. And the Dead Sea is the lowest point on the surface of this planet. There's no place anywhere on this earth that has a lower sea level than the Dead Sea. It's 1,300 feet below sea level. And you can walk way out there. Then it's another 1,300 feet to the bottom of it. And so it's a lot of fun just to several places. If you want to, you can go out and go wading and so on. One of the places where we often will go is here in Gedi. In Gedi, this is where, remember, David was fleeing from Saul, and he went down and cut off part of Saul's cloak, remember, and hollered at the guard, why aren't you taking better care of the king, and so on. Happened right here in Gedi. But here's a place where you can go wading. But don't drink any. Don't get any in your eyes, because it may hurt your eyes. And they have a health spa here. And many persons who have arthritis and rheumatism, they say that this water, and here below sea level and this heat, it makes them feel so good. So they have many different spas. Also, they have the mud here. And they say if you cover yourself with this mud, it'll make you more beautiful. And then you wash it up. And in fact, they package this and send it to Paris, you know, and it's sold for beauty packs and so on. The Dead Sea is just so fascinating and so wonderful. Now, on the west side of the Dead Sea, up at the north, here is Jericho. Jericho, the city of palm trees. Below sea level, and it's nice. It's kind of a resort there and so on. And so many things in the Bible happen here at Jericho. Fruit is growing there all the time. And here one year in January, all these people from Illinois, Minnesota, and so forth, and on our tour group in February. And here we were. Let's stop and get some fruit to eat on the way. Such delicious fruit in Israel. And flowers blooming there all the time. But the old walled city of Jericho has a great interest for us, because this is the first place captured by the Israelites when they came out of the wilderness into the promised land under Joshua. Remember, they marched around once a day for 6 days, and then on the seventh day, they marched around 7 times and blew the ram's horn and shouted. And what happened? The walls came tumbling down. So this is an archaeological tell. It's a layer cake city. 20 or more layers of civilization. It's like a cake with all the goodies inside, and the archaeologists can find. The city of Jericho covers 13 acres, the same size as the biggest pyramid in Egypt. And back behind, here's the Mount of Temptation, where they say Jesus was tempted after 40 days and 40 nights there in the wilderness. And so here we're looking down in the middle of the oldest part of ancient Jericho. It's the oldest walled city. Say 7,000 BC. It's the oldest city in the world. The oldest walled city in all the earth. And archaeologists, they found this pottery with the shape of a human face. And so they called him Jericho John. And I know the first time I went to the Holy Land, I said, oh, I hope I get to see Jericho John. And sure enough, here he was, right on a shelf in the Rockefeller Museum, north of the walls of Jerusalem, just waiting to say hello. So here is Jericho John, one of the many things found here. Now, on the west side of the Dead Sea, here's Jericho. They come on down south, and here are the caves of Qumran. 1947, this Arab boy was hunting for his goats and gone along the top of those cliffs, and he saw those caves and threw rocks inside, and he heard a crash. And what had happened was that he had broken one of these giant jars, and inside were ancient writings. These were the Dead Sea Scrolls, hidden here when the Romans were coming to destroy Jerusalem in 70 A.D., and these scrolls were written by a special group of Jews called the Essenes. You know, there were the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Herodians. Okay, there was also the Essenes. And the Essenes were people who lived a monastic life away from civilization and down here in this community, and they copied books of the Bible. And they made rules for their congregation. They also wrote thanksgiving psalms. Also, they have a scroll of prophecies of the last day that's here. And so here's the scriptorium where these Essenes sat to make copies of the books of the Bible. And even, you know, they found the benches and the ink in the inkwell. It's carbonized, kind of dried, but it's still right there. And these coins were found in the dirt underneath the room. And they note from the date on the coins, there's one of the 5 ways they can date the Dead Sea Scrolls. And so these made all of these books. And where are they today? In the Israel Museum, in the new section of Jerusalem. Here's one of the most ultra-modern museums in the world. And a part of this great complex is a special structure over to the right, part of it black, part of it white, called the Shrine of the Book. And inside this special area are housed the Dead Sea Scrolls. Over here at the left, you can see it's right across the street from the Knesset Parliament building. In the middle, you notice that part of it's black, part of it's white, because one of the scrolls told about a war between the children of darkness and the children of light. And over to the right, you see the dome. Okay, it's like the shape of a scroll jar. And water would run down and keep it cool. And inside, it's kind of made like a cave. And here in the middle, we can look and we can see inside that white dome. And it's like a scroll handle upside down. And then in that glass around is the oldest copy, the book of Isaiah in the Hebrew language. So they found every book of the Old Testament except one, except the one that doesn't have God's name in it, the book of Esther. And they found a copy, and many copies of many of these books. And before they found this, the oldest copy in the Hebrew language we had of the Old Testament was 900 A.D. This took it back 1,000 years more to 100 B.C. And so here we have the book of Isaiah, the oldest copy in the Hebrew language. Well, at the Dead Sea, we went to Jericho, went to Qumran, in Gedi, and then on here is this great fortress. And what is this fortress? It's the word that means fortress, Masada. Masada, this great fortress above the Dead Sea. Herod the Great built a palace here in case his enemies would come and try to conquer him. He could go here and withstand them. And then here, 70 AD, when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans, the Jewish patriotic people said, where can we go? Well, they went down to another fortress near Bethlehem, the Herodian, and that wasn't very safe, so they came up here. And the Essenes, they hid their scrolls, and they came up here too. And wanted to, when the Roman armies came in 8 Roman army camps to starve them out. In the middle, you see down that rectangle down there, that's one of the 8 Roman army camps that was around it. And so here were these people up here on top here. Masada is, when we go there, they have a snake path you can go up. Or they have the cable cars, and the 2 cable cars going up and going down, hold about 40 people each one. And here we are on the top. And look out over the Dead Sea, and all this evaporation happening caused it to be kind of hazy sometimes. But Masada is such a great place to go. And archaeologists have been working and uncovering things and restoring things and all the frescoes and the mosaics and so on. And it's just kind of like going to Pompeii. It's just a thrill to see all of these things here. In the middle, you can see at the north end the terraced parts of the palace of Herod the Great. Over to the left is the bathtub. And look how bright these colors are. And when it gets really dark outdoors, these colors will really show up real bright. Well, the Jews were up here, about 900 of them or so, and the Romans were trying to starve them out. But they had a lot of food up there and also water. And those poor Romans down there in their army camps and all their armor was really hot and uncomfortable. But here's some of the Jewish coins at the left, and here's part of the Jewish armor at the right. And finally, the Roman army built this ramp. You can see in the middle. And they came up there with their battering rams and knocked down the walls and so on. And they found a lot of water and they found much food, but no people. Because these people chose to take their own lives rather than surrender to the Romans. But a few women and children escaped to tell the story. And the book of Josephus has this exciting story in it. Well, you know, archaeologists have found, here's food at the left. And it's so dry there, all that food 2,000 years old. And here's a woman's sandals and her braided hair. Well, Masada is a very special place for the Jewish people today, Israel, because of their last stand against the Romans. So today, when the Jewish young people have finished their basic military training, the place they go to have their formal induction into the military is Masada. And they go up the snake path by torchlight, and here they are, and they chant this slogan, Masada shall never fall again. Masada shall never fall again. And they mean that the state of Israel. The state of Israel is here to stay. Well, you know, Jesus was baptized in the Jordan River at the age of 30. He was tempted after 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. And then he returned to Galilee to begin his public ministry of 3.5 years. And so much of that ministry happened right here around this Sea of Galilee. So beautiful, so peaceful. It's about 18 miles, it's about 8 miles across and about 17 miles long, 626 feet below sea level, fresh water. You can catch fish there today. This is a favorite place to go water skiing, go boating, and the Israeli people like to come here for the holiday or to Tiberias. And here's this beautiful Sea of Galilee. Tiberias is the main city here. We usually spend a night here, so we'd be 2 days up here in Galilee. And we stay at some of the luxury hotels inside of Tiberias. And sometimes we stayed out here at Anaf Genesor, a Jewish kibbutz hotel. And you walk out through those trees and go swimming in the Sea of Galilee. So many times we've done that. A few years ago, it had a dry spell. The water level kind of shrunk down, and in all this mud, they went out there, they found a boat, a 2,000-year-old boat, right there where we used to go swimming all the time. And 2,000 years old. This is the time of Jesus. Is it possible this is one of the boats that he and the disciples used? You know, so they call it the Jesus boat. But here it is. They have it on display here at Naaf Genessar. Such an inspiration, such a joy, such a beautiful place. And to go across that Sea of Galilee. And, you know, we go from Tiberias on up to Capernaum. It takes about 45 minutes and go across on this boat. And they have two decks, one down below, glassed in. You can go out through the windows if you want to, or be up on top on the deck, where I think it's the most fun to be up there and sit out there and just to see the Sea of Galilee as you go along. At the left, you can look up and see the Mount of the Beatitudes up there where Jesus preached the Sermon on the Mount. And we go across and here's this water. This is authentic. This is the real Sea of Galilee. This is the real, the same water that was there. Oh, you know, when Jesus was here and when he said, "Peace be still," and stilled the storm. It's the same water where Peter walked on the water and Christ walked on the water. And Peter walked until he started looking at himself and then he started to sink. So faith is looking at the Lord in love. Pride is looking at yourself. But faith is looking at the Lord in love. And as long as you look at the Lord, you can walk, you can do amazing things. Oh, the very same place. And here we are on the other side of Capernaum. And this is one of Christ's favorite cities. He spent so much time here. This is a city where Peter and Andrew lived and James and John. Where Christ performed so many miracles and taught so many of his parables. And here's the synagogue. And Jesus went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day and read from the book of Isaiah, you know, stood up to read and sit down to teach. Well, this synagogue is built on the foundation of the one that was there in New Testament time. You can still see the black basalt rocks underneath this synagogue. This synagogue was built in the 200s, 300s A.D., right in front of it, in the middle, you can see the excavation they found in St. Peter's house, where Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law. And here's some of the entablature, some of these things are from that synagogue. Where are our bus drivers waiting for us and to take us on to visit? Here's the Mount of the Beatitudes, where the Sermon on the Mount was preached. Here, and looking down over this another eight-sided church. Another eight-sided church. And here it is. And we go here. We go out underneath these trees and sit on the benches. And someone will read from Matthew 5, the Beatitudes. And maybe someone will sing, "I Walk Today Where Jesus Walked." And it's such an inspirational time, you know. I just long for the next opportunity to go, because the Bible just comes alive. And I always feel just so close to the Lord when I'm there. And you just kind of get homesick and anxious to go again, you know. But here it is, this beautiful, on the Mount of the Beatitudes. And this mountain is such a way that it's kind of like an amphitheater, that Jesus could be speaking in a normal voice. And here on the hillside, all these people, looking down here, and on in the distance would be the city of Tiberias. And then, you know, after Jesus rose from the dead, during the 40 days before his ascension, he appeared 11 different times. One of them was right here at the Sea of Galilee. And also right here is where Jesus fed the multitude, the 5,000 persons, when the lad shared his lunch with the Lord. So they built this pavilion here. You can go down here and sit here. It'd be just so nice and so lovely. Well, here in Galilee, that one of the mountains is Mount Tabor over to the right. And Christ, the miracle of the transfiguration happened either at Mount Hermon at the left or over at the right at Mount Tabor, where Christ showed his disciples what he'd be like in his future glory. The spring flowers of Israel are just so beautiful. You know that so many of Christ's illustrations were used by from the countryside. And he said, the flowers. Look at all the flowers that God adorns them in all their beauty. But you're more important than the flowers. And so don't worry. God's going to take care of you too. So many of the illustrations
like
in the book of John,
of
the life,
words from the, gospel,
the light,
John.
And the love.
Jesus was there just sharing with some of his friends. And he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Ah, the light of life. He is the light of life, and he came to shine on me. Oh, come on, won't you sing it with me? He is the light of life, and he came to shine on me. Isn't that lovely? Come, let's sing it again. He is the light of life, and he came to shine. Jesus said, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink, and it will become in him a well of living water springing up into everlasting life. And another time he said, I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Anyone who eats of this bread will live forever. This bread I give for the life of the world. He is the light of life, and he came to shine, shine on me. He lives for all to see. He is all. Light will set you free.
Well, when we see the spring flowers of Israel, we're reminded not only about the precepts of Christ and his parables in the past, but also the prophecies of the future. The prophecies of the day that after the Jewish people would have been scattered over all of this earth for many centuries, in the very last days before Christ comes, the Jewish people being brought back home to their land to rebuild their cities, to plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them and so on. And so one of the great thrills in going to Israel is seeing Bible prophecy come to pass, and that the Jewish people are coming back home. And all of these things that are happening, and the Jewish kibbutz, and their latest scientific agriculture, and the flowers that's blooming everywhere. And you know that up along the Mediterranean Sea, they have these flower gardens, and they go out early in the morning before sunlight and cut these flowers and rush them down to the airport, and they're flown over Europe. And late that afternoon, people in London and Paris and Geneva and Vienna and Amsterdam can go to the far markets and buy flowers and have on their dinner table that night, which had been grown that very same day in Israel. And maybe you've been to Amsterdam and maybe seen the flower markets there and so forth. But all of this beauty and all of these things that are happening there. And the Jewish people going back and hear their people joy and singing many of the old songs. And they come from so many countries, and each one has their own Jewish tradition, have the Jewish folk dances. And there's many places where you can go, and they'll have a demonstration of this Jewish music and of these folk dances. Here these young people are singing and dancing in front of the menorah. And some of the hotels have auditoriums where they have these programs at night. Or here's a place called the Khan, K-A-H-N. You can go, they put on this performance for you. Down to the Western Wall on Friday night when the Sabbath begins. And here before the Western Wall, the men are praying one place, the women another, and the men and the boys are kind of dancing, singing the songs and so forth, and praising God.
This great state of Israel has fulfilled the dream of ages, and it shines on history's pages like a light of inspiration for each freedom-loving nation. Raise your voice, let's rejoice, sing everybody Hava.
Amazing things to see in the state of Israel today are the trees. All the trees that's been planted and growing there, fulfilling Bible prophecy. You know, in 1912, the Ottoman Turkish Empire wanted to find out how many trees are there in Palestine. They counted them. 283 trees, all they could find in all of Palestine. And since then, they've been planting millions and millions and millions of trees. And the rainfall has doubled, it's tripled. And the rainfall tripled because the more trees that's been planted. And they had a problem at first with malaria around the Sea of Galilee. So they imported eucalyptus trees from Australia. And these eucalyptus trees soak up all the water, and mosquitoes are allergic to these eucalyptus trees. They got rid of the mosquitoes, and they got rid of the swamps. So right along here, the Jordan River, you hear all these eucalyptus trees in so many places. And so many of the evergreen trees. Well, when you go to Israel, that you can plant trees if you want to. There's many different places where trees can be planted. And this, right outside of the city of Jerusalem, there's the Balfour Forest and so forth. And they give you a tree to plant, and you plant it, and they'll water it and take care of it. And then you have a pin you can wear. Here's a certificate. And you can plant this in memory of somebody or in honor of someone. And it costs maybe like $5 or $7 and so forth. And here up the Balfour Forest. And here are these people planting trees. And that must have been 1968. And the last time I was there, I made a special attempt to go to see what those trees were doing. And they're giants now. They're just big, big trees. Isaiah 55:13. Instead of the briar will come up the fir tree, instead of the thorn, the myrtle tree. And eucalyptus trees, I understand, are a variety of myrtle tree. Isaiah 55:13. To go to Israel and see prophecy being fulfilled. Well, here's a very famous valley, and there's a lot of trees there. This is the valley of Jezreel, the valley of Esdraelon. Here is the valley of Megiddo, because a great fortress, Megiddo, was built here. I'm standing on top of Megiddo taking these pictures. And if we had 9 screens to go around in a circle, I could show you what it looks like 360 degrees all the way around. Well, we'll move the middle picture over, and so we can just look on down a little bit more down in the valley. A lot of famous wars have happened here because this is kind of a crossroads. Thutmose III came here and had the battle, and young Josiah died here. This is Megiddo, and this is where the Battle of Armageddon is going to happen. Revelation 16, this big valley. And this fortress, one of the 4 great chariot cities built by Solomon. Ahab's, a lot of his architecture is still there. And the University of Chicago has been excavating this layer cake city, Megiddo. So fascinating. A great storage bin where they stored grain and so on. And here where they walked down to go to the spring of water. Well, we walked down all these steps, and then we go out at the other end, and our bus is waiting for us to take us to the city of Haifa on Mount Carmel, where Elijah had his contest with the prophets of Baal. And here, looking out over the Mediterranean Sea, and the city of Haifa is a very important city because it's the commercial industry center. This is where all the industry and so forth happens. Settled a lot by German Jews. Jews from Germany settled so much there. Now, between Haifa and Tel Aviv, here's Caesarea. And Caesarea was a Roman city built by Herod the Great. 100,000 people lived here. And here's the Roman aqueduct that brought water down to the city. And right out here, that Herod the Great built a great harbor. And archaeologists are diving down and finding how that harbor was built and so on to rival Alexandria. And here are the ruins of the city of Caesarea. And at the right could be the prison where Paul was in prison for 2 years. Remember, this is where Cornelius was a centurion in charge of Roman soldiers, and he was the first Gentile to become a Christian. This was where all the Roman governors lived. Pontius Pilate lived here, and he only went to Jerusalem on the feast days. Herod Agrippa, Felix and Festus, and all of these people lived here. This is where the revolt against Rome started, 66 A.D.,